fans, J.R. Radcliffe again, hosting this episode of the Green 19 podcast, and once again joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood of PackersNews.com. Day three is in the books. The draft is a wrap. Seven rounds. The Packers come away with 11 players. They've got six new ones that they added on day three on Saturday. That would be Evan Williams, a safety from Oregon, Jacob Monk, the center from Duke, Ketan Oladapo, defensive back from Oregon State. He's a safety. Travis Glover from Georgia State. He's a tackle. Michael Pratt, quarterback from Tulane in the seventh round. And then Kalen King, defensive back from Penn State, cornerback, the only cornerback that they took in this draft to wrap things up. So they got three safeties all told when you throw in Javon Bullard from Georgia on day two. So I don't know if that's Spoon, if that's where you want to start. That's obviously a position they wanted to emphasize. In general, I'm just interested in, now that you see the class, if anything, any trends jump out, if any particular storyline develops, or if you just think, this was a pretty standard draft.
Well, I think it was somewhat similar to last year's in that they rebuilt a position. Last year was tight end. This year it's safety. Mm-hmm. And they basically, you know, other than the one guy they have that's a for sure thing, which is Xavier McKinney, they loaded up on safeties and all the same type of safeties. And I think there was, that was for a reason. I think they took some box type safeties. I think the latter two guys are probably more box safeties, Oladapo and Evan Williams. And then Javon Bullard, he should be able to play the deep center if they need him. But I think this is going to be a team that plays a lot of three safeties. I think, you know, we were talking about them being short at the Sam linebacker position, and I think they may go without that at some times. I think they'll probably play a lot of three safety looks, and that guy will be one of those box safeties who plays up near the line of scrimmage. And, you know, they can play eight-man fronts. They can cover, nickel personnel if that's what the offense has on. I think it'll give them a lot of options. But those guys are going to have to tackle. I mean, they're going to have to be really good tacklers. And I think that's what they're hoping out of that group. So I think they rebuilt that position, and then they just kind of accented all over the place. Offensive line, quarterback. They added an inside linebacker, running back. Pretty diverse draft.
Ryan, we can get into the individual players too in a second, but I want to ask you the same type of question. If you see a story when you look at the seven players, or I should say the 11 players that they drafted.
Yeah, and it feels a lot like a cliche story, but in this specific situation, I think it is what it is, and it's competition. Brian Gutekunst entered this draft having drafted 24 players in the last two classes combined. 22 of those players were still on the roster, and he just added 11. And when you look at the specific positions where he specifically created competition, offensive line, every spot not owned by Elgton Jenkins is now in a competition. Backup running back behind Josh Jacobs, that's in a competition. Linebacker, I think you can pretty safely say that when they're in nickel, it's Quay Walker and Edgerrin Cooper. But when they are in base and they do use three linebackers, there's competition there. Safety, as Spoon said, they rebuilt the position. There's going to be competition there. I think that there could eventually, potentially, possibly be competition at nickel linebacker, nickel corner. Because Javon Bullard, if they go to that three safety look, Keyshawn Nixon right now is the nickel. But Javon Bullard's played a ton of nickel. That's something that's part of his profile as a player. He can play that position. Backup quarterback, that's now a competition between Michael Pratt and Sean Clifford. And we already knew that there's a kicker battle that's going on from now, from the first day of the offseason to the last day of training camp. This entire roster, there's competition everywhere you look. And that's a great thing for a young team. I think that last year this is a team that saw that when you are so young, competition breeds development. I mean, it breeds success, and it bred it last year. It's going to be some camp.
Our colleague, Tom, Pete Doherty, asked a question about how young this team was a couple times to Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst. I thought it was really interesting. He asked if it was a goal of theirs to remain young, to just be the youngest team in the league or one of the youngest teams over and over again, and rather than using it as a stepping stone toward a middle-level veteran team that can compete for championships. I think we saw last year that a really young team actually can compete for a championship, and I thought their answers kind of revealed that they do like staying young. So I do want to know if you think the guys that they drafted will be starters, or if we've reached a point where the Packers just have too many guys who are already sort of cemented in place and that these guys are just going to be the depth, these guys are just going to be the competition, or if you think they need a couple of the guys that they got over these 3 days to really contribute in the year 2024 already.
Well, what they did was during the offseason, they sort of took a look at the roster, and they started trimming some of the aging guys. I mean, they didn't they got rid of Devondre Campbell. Bakhtiari's gone. Aaron Jones is gone. Darnell Savage is gone. Jonathan Owens is gone. They started Rudy Ford. They started this whole process of, okay, we're going to start clearing the decks a little bit for this next class and bring that class in to replace these veteran guys because we think we can do better than what those guys are. And so they made room for these 11 guys. Now, not all 11 will make it necessarily, but they've sort of reset the deck. And I think that's what their plan will be every year, is identify the guys who are getting long in the tooth and create this wealth of young talent that is continually growing and keep adding to it. And I think that's what they're doing. That was their plan all through the off season. And now you see they totally remade the safety position, and it's young. And they've got young talent on the offensive line now. So it's on and on. And, it wouldn't surprise me if 9 of those guys make the team. 9 of the 11 make the team, maybe more.
Ryan, the first two guys that were taken today, Evan Williams from Oregon, Jacob Monk from Duke, both of those guys, the Packers traded up to get. They came into today with 8 picks. They consolidated that down to 6 picks, traded up for both of those guys. That would lead you to believe that they really wanted those particular guys and were willing to make some moves to make sure they had those guys. I don't know if there's something about those two specifically that jumped to mind as them having traits that would make that seem like an obvious move for the Packers to make, or really what you know about these guys at all and how you think they fit that would make them such an attractive option for the Packers.
Well, Brian Gutekunst said it, he said that the one time that the board did get thin was in the 4th round. And so he felt like they wanted to trade up for Evan Williams there because they had him as good value there. I said it coming into the draft, and I think it's a good time to reflect. A draft always tells you what a team thinks of itself itself. And I think that we certainly learned some things about what the Packers think of themselves in this draft. The thing that comes out that stands out to mind first and foremost is it's very clear the Packers are comfortable and content. They're pleased with what they have at corner. I think us on the outside, we talked about it last night. That was a position that seemed like you might want to add there. I think Brian Gutekunst is pleased with what he has at corner. Now we'll have to see if he's right or not, because they waited until the very end, Kalen King, 7th round, to take a corner. And so, that was not top of mind. We saw what was top of mind. And I over the years, I've gotten so sick and tired of the narrative around the draft that it's only best player available, because that's only half the statement. It's best player available at a position of need. That's why every draft board and all 32 teams are so wildly different from each other, because you're not drafting just the best player. It's the best player available for you. And how does it improve your roster? Where are the roster deficiencies, and where do you add value to that? It's slippery slope, because you have to add the talent, but it's not just – you're not going to have six centers because they're all really good, or seven running backs because they're all really good. You have to distribute among the positions. And Brian Gutekunst came into this draft knowing that they needed to rebuild safety, knowing that he really wanted to pad that offensive line, knowing that linebacker switching to a 4-3 was going to need more talent, more bodies. And he went about doing that. And I think that when it came to corner, he feels really good about what they have. I think it'll be very interesting to see if he's right.
Tom, I'll give you the kind of the rest of the draft. We don't maybe need to go through each guy individually. I do think the seventh round was super interesting. I mean, for one thing, you'll have the quarterback, Michael Pratt out of Tulane. That's going to get people interested. Quarterbacks always do. And he's a guy who can probably compete for that backup spot against Sean Clifford. He said on the phone call with media that he knew Sean Clifford or had texted with him previously. They had some sort of relationship. So that'll be kind of an interesting little battle to watch that I'm sure people will pay attention to. And then there's Kalen King of Penn State, one of the last picks in the draft. And he really had an emotional interview with media. You could tell that he was very upset by where he was taken. You know, not that it's not the Packers, just with the process and how he felt like he deserved to go higher. He quite famously, I guess, was really very good 2 years ago, was a projected first round pick, and then had a really bad season in 2023 and fell all the way to the seventh round. So I'm intrigued by guys like that. You know, sometimes a guy who just has a bad year, Dontavian Wicks being a good example, doesn't really, you know, he falls. And then, oh, by the way, he's still a really good player. So I'm curious what you think of those two guys, because I do think people are going to be following those two guys a little bit early on.
Yes. Seventh round is always good to get a guy who's, you know what, is burning. You know, he's really fried that he didn't get picked higher, and he's going to make some people pay. I mean, Carrington Valentine was that way last year. You know, I think he didn't know every single corner who had been drafted ahead of him. Guys like that are who you need to get in the seventh round, because they're going to do whatever they can to get up the roster. Now they have to have the talent to do it. And that you brought up the point about King. I mean, his junior year was phenomenal. He had like 21 pass defenses, I think, as a sophomore. And then he goes into his junior year and he's starting, and either they don't throw at him or he just didn't play as well, and he winds up being a seventh round pick. So, maybe they got a bargain there, or maybe he showed who he really was his junior year. We'll find out. Pratt is just a guy that, you know, I think you try to get him into a place where they can coach him, where the coaching is really good. And, you know, they can work on mechanics and they can work on, delivery, because he has the athletic ability. You know, he's pretty good numbers. He's very similar to Clifford athletically. I think Clifford's a little quicker. I know he did better in the three-cone drill, and he's actually pretty more elusive than people think he is. But they're, you know, kind of similar guys. And that creates a nice competition too. And he's probably hot to, you know, prove people wrong as well.
I do think Oladapo is going to be kind of popular. He's a guy who made a habit of changing his hair color for every game. He was asked if he would be willing to go green and gold. He's from Oregon State. Oregon, also green and gold, is the enemy there. So he said he hedged a little bit, wasn't sure he could do green. I think he's going to be a popular player. He seems to have a really light personality. And Travis Glover is interesting too, a tackle at his what we consider a smaller school, at least by, you know, football standards, Georgia State. He did have some offers, Pac-12, SEC schools, but chose to go to Georgia State, was there for 5 years. A lot of these guys are deeply, deeply experienced, and that's true across the board in this draft. But you're talking about, like, guys who are almost 24. In some cases, they are 24 years old. They've started 5 years. I mean, you saw that with Monk as well. That's a guy who just has played forever. Ryan, I don't know if that's something that Brian Gutekunst is looking for. Like I said, this draft is kind of just older and maybe a little thinner in terms of raw talent because you don't have as many guys leaving early this season. So I don't know if that's just sort of a byproduct, but feels like maybe experience is something they're looking for. Guys who are captains on their team seems to be a recurring theme. Anything else jump out that you think Brian Gutekunst is really looking for as he's scouting these players?
I think, you know, we've talked about how a year ago they drafted like they were in a rebuild. They had a first-year starting quarterback. They loaded up a lot of pass-catching talent around him to try to really extend Jordan Love's runway into the league. And there were positions last year they just flat-out didn't hit. Safety. They didn't hit it last year. Everyone knew it was a huge need. They didn't hit it. They weren't a safety away from the Super Bowl as far as their train of thought went a year ago. Turns out they might have been. I thought they drafted like a contender that they are this year. And that means, okay, there's some older rookies coming in that have a lot of experience in college level. It's not going to, you know, you're not building for the future here. Maybe youth, they're still young, but the difference between 20 and 24, maybe it's not as significant. It's a very heavy needs draft. I mean, they hit their needs. As Spoon said, they accentuated, right? That's what a contender does. I mean, the needs on this roster coming into this draft were very apparent. We saw what they were, and then we saw them go about drafting those positions. So, you know, that's what stood out to me. I mean, I thought they drafted like you would expect a contender to draft. They went about trying to put themselves over that hump.
Tom, what's missing here that this team still needs to address? I mean, no edge rushers, which is unusual, I think, for any team to go through a full draft without, you know, one of those guys. Cornerback, which we've discussed, it's really just Kalen King with one of the last picks. They didn't get anybody to supplement what they have there. Those are kind of two premium positions that they didn't really end up pursuing. Do you feel like there's more that they have to do or that the roster is mostly complete? I mean, I don't know what else realistically they would do at this point, but what do you think still needs to be answered for this team before we can again say they are definitively going to contend for, you know, for the NFC?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that there's a lot they need to add. I think we'll know that as training camp goes along. Yeah. I think right now they're fine, and I don't see them needing to go out and get any veterans anywhere. I think they've got enough, you know, experience pretty much everywhere. And then, you know, where they don't have experience, they have some young draft picks to supplement what they have. And I think they need to let it play out. I can't remember if it was Gutekunst or LaFleur said this, but that last year's group has got to, you know, move forward. The young guys from last year have to be moved forward, because if they don't, the group this year is going to replace them. And so that's kind of, I think they want to let that happen. I don't think they want to bring in, you know, too many veterans or anything like that to sort of stop that competition from happening. I think they want to put a lot of pressure on the guys from last year and from 2 years ago to perform, to up their game. And if you don't up your game, then, you know, you're going to be out of here. You know, I think there's some guys like that on the offensive line. I think Josh Myers is in that case. I think Sean Ryan is in that. You know, I think at corner, you know, some of those guys are going to have to come through. Now, there's not a ton of pressure on them, but, you know, running back A.J. Dillon's going to have to show something more than he did last year. That's for sure, because he's got a couple guys coming in to take his job. So, you know, everywhere there's a place where guys can get replaced. And so I think that's what they've kind of created.
If I could add one name to that for none of the reasons that you just said, because Zach Tom is a good right tackle, period. There's no question about that. But if they want their best five and they believe that that's Zach Tom at center, the money's at right tackle. That's the business of the league. It's not at center. And something I've kind of wondered, it can be really difficult to persuade a good right tackle to leave for a lesser paid position. Even if he's better there, he's not going to get more money. When they've created this competition on the offensive line, they have also created competition at right tackle for Zach Tom. Not that he's going to be a starting offensive lineman, period. He's one of their best five. But there's competition at right tackle. And if he loses that competition, well, that's maybe how you get a better center, maybe an elite center, to leave the money to go to center because that's where the snaps are. So I think that you know, what they set up for the competition throughout the offensive line, that I thought it was really savvy.
Yeah, Ryan, Josh Myers is one of the names I was thinking of as Tom was talking about guys needing to step it up. I feel like he is kind of under the spotlight. Maybe Jacob Monk is that guy pretty early in his career. Maybe it's Zach Tom moving to center. Brian Gutekunst specifically mentioned that he likes guys who can play center, which is just a versatility thing. But also, you know, they could stand probably to upgrade. You know, Josh Myers has been okay. He's been better than okay in some games. I do think, though, maybe I'm wrong about this. I feel like if that were really a concern of theirs, they would have taken Graham Barton with their first round pick. He went one pick after to Tampa Bay. Graham Barton, an interior lineman, probably could probably play guard, but could play center. And instead they went with Jordan Morgan, a guy who could play outside. Now I suppose that it plays into moving Zach Tom inside. You know, we talked about that a little bit too. So if it is Josh Myers or somebody else, I mean, is there anyone you're looking at specifically who's like, they're going to have to, their job could be in danger. There's somebody that maybe we're not even thinking about, like they're on notice that this is not a long-term situation if they aren't able to raise their level of play.
Well, I'm not sure that the choice of Morgan over Barton had anything to do with anything else other than they liked Morgan better than they liked Barton, and that he was probably more likely to be able to play tackle. But because he can play tackle, because he can play guard, that allows them to do some other things. Whereas Barton, if he couldn't play tackle, that would have affected not affected some other positions. It would have limited them somewhere. So I think they liked Morgan better as a player. And then I think they liked the fact that they thought he could play left tackle. And so from there, you work the offensive line based on your tackles. And if that meant that Josh Myers has to be kicked out, then fine, they do that. But they'll let that play out with the competition, and Morgan could wind up at right tackle. You know, they drafted him, I suspect, to start somewhere. And I don't know where that's going to be, but they probably don't know where it's going to be either.
Yeah.
So I, you know, those are probably the positions, you know, the ones that I've mentioned. I think there will be some positions at wide receiver where, you know, guys can't just rely on what they did last year and that they better come ready to play. Or, you know, they're not going to have the roles that they had last year. I think that's going to be a dogfight too.
Yeah, I think it's important to note with Jordan Morgan, I asked Matt LaFleur directly, do you start him at left tackle? Not as the starter. Do you start his competition, his position battle at left tackle? And he said yes. So Jordan Morgan versus Rashid Walker at left tackle. The winner's the left tackle. Whoever doesn't win that battle probably competes at right tackle with Zach Tom. The winner's the right tackle. Whoever doesn't win that right tackle battle goes inside. because those are, you know, those are likely starters on the offensive line. The reason they don't need to draft a center or Graham Barton specifically is because they have Zach Tom. They can fill that within. So that, you know, you take the left tackle prospect over the center prospect in the first round. That's the premium fit. As far as your question, who needs to step up? I mean, basically on the offensive line, everyone not named Elton Jenkins, and not Zach Tom from a standpoint of he might lose a spot on the line. Zach Tom will 100% be on a starter on the line, but is it at right tackle where, again, the money is, or is it inside? It's a domino effect, starting with Jordan Morgan versus Rashid Walker at left tackle.
Yeah. And who's to say that Monk doesn't win the center job,
right,
and Morgan wins the left tackle job, and Walker moves over to right tackle, and Tom moves into guard. That's a possibility. You know, Monk, I think, was taken with the idea that Myers is in the final year of his contract. Mm-hmm. So take a guy, you really like him. They think he's really athletic, and he is really athletic. And develop him, see whether he can play guard. And then, you know, he can probably play center. So at the very least, he's ready by year two when they let Myers go. So I totally would not be surprised if Jordan Morgan is the starting left tackle. You know, we've seen Rashid Walker played pretty well, but he was inconsistent, you know, at times too. And he's going to have to pick up his game in a big way, because I think Jordan Morgan's going to push him. And then, you know, Walker's going to push Zach Tom, because Walker's going to want to go and play right tackle if he can't play left tackle. So it's a good situation to have, I think, all in all. It's just you better have five guys step up and play well.
I think one important note on Josh Myers, I think it's important to keep in mind that the coaches like Josh Myers. I think the coaches like Josh Myers than people outside the building like Josh Myers, because he's first and foremost a good pre-snap communicator at that position. He handles the center position well. He does have plus mobility. I mean, you watch him on film to the second level on pulls. He moves well. The issue that Josh Myers gets into, and I think some of this is that he's got tackle height at the center position, is leverage at the point of attack, and he needs to get stronger. Those are areas where Jacob Monk, according to his, you know, what we know of him on paper, he's got to come in and do it. But those are areas that, you know, he's strong at the point of attack. So I think that, you know, it's important to keep in mind Josh Myers can still be the starting center on this team in 2024. There's no question that he can still win that starting job, but he will have to win that starting job.
Well, we have entered undrafted free agent season. And Tom, it's very early, so I don't know. As we record this, it's really just happening all around us. So I don't know if anybody jumps to mind. There are not a lot of spots on this roster. There are 11 new draft picks coming in. There's, you know, we talked about that there are some openings, but it's not going to be easy to crack this roster as a UDFA. Still, the Packers have made use of UDFAs pretty dramatically in the past. There's a name in particular that jumps to mind for me, but I don't know if I imagine you'll be looking at that one too, but who jumps out early crop, Tom, anybody that you really have an eye on?
Yeah. The guy who jumps out is Peter Bowden.
There we go.
From Wisconsin. You know, they signed him and he's going to go in there and compete with Orzech. So I think that Bowden was probably the top long snapper in the draft. He might have been, you know, if he wasn't one, he was maybe two. And he's got a chance to win a job, you know. They would love to have a new long snapper. As long as he's consistent and he's cheap, he'd be cheap. I don't think Orzech was all that great last year, so there's an opportunity there for him to win a spot. And then, you know, they brought in some more linemen too. And, you know, we saw what, you know, like a Caleb Jones can do. And, you know, they can force themselves onto the roster. And so a couple of these young offensive tackles that they sign could, you know, could have an impact. You never know, or at least make the roster. I'm not saying they're going to be starters or anything like that, but it's a small class. You know, I think we were up to like 7 or 8. It's not going to be like 15 like they had in the past because they've had so many draft picks. And they already have, what, I think 72 guys on the roster plus the 11. I think that's 83. So that leaves like 7 spots, something like that. It won't be a huge, huge class, but we do know that guys come off that part, you know, the undrafted, you know, we saw it last year and we'll see it again this year. Malik Heath made it. The outside linebacker made it. You never know.
Well, that's the biggest question to camp is whether or not that incredible streak of undrafted rookies making the 53 is going to continue. Because this, if ever there was a year where that's going to end, it'd be this year.
That is true. Peter Bowden, though. I'm buying Peter Bowden's stock immediately.
There you go.
He's a guy that I think really has a shot to make this roster. But it's very, very early. Ryan, any last thoughts before we shut this down and say goodbye to 2024 draft, because the 2025 draft is going to be here sooner than you think in this town, Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah. You know, as a whole, I think two things. I think that this is a good draft class on paper. And I think that good draft classes aren't made on paper. Right. So that means really nothing. It's got to translate to the field. And we have no idea if it will. So there's no real early reaction. But when it comes to the instant analysis of a draft class, the only thing I look at is, does it make sense? Was there a coherent thought and philosophy and approach? And this draft class makes sense. Now we have to see if they can play.
Tom, you get the last word if you want it.
Yeah, and I think one thing that you see more with Gutekunst than you did with Ted Thompson is you get guys from big time programs that are coming in. I mean, Arizona, Texas A&M, Georgia, USC, Missouri, Oregon, Oregon State, Penn State. You know, so these are guys who've played big time football and they've played in, you know, really big rivalry games. They've played in, you know, tournaments, they've played in bowl games. And I think that is significant when you need them to come through right away. You know, they're not what you would call developmental guys who are going to need some time to get used to the NFL style. They've played as close to NFL football as can be. So that kind of stands out to me with this class, especially.
They are Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. Find everything they have at PackersNews.com, JSOnline.com, Green Bay Press Gazette site, Appleton Post Crescent, wherever you get your Packers news. You can find this podcast on YouTube. A lot of other great things at the Journal Sentinel YouTube account. A lot of sports videos, Bucks video going on right now, Brewers. It's all over there. So check that out. And obviously give us a follow on social media at PackersNews.com. Check out everything we have. Thank you, gentlemen. That'll do it for the 2024 draft. Hope you got your hotel room all ready for Green Bay 2025. That's going to be a wild time.
Green Bay is on the clock.
They might need to start piling in those 700,000 people now because I don't know how they're going to get here by draft 2025, by April 24th or whatever it is. So that's ahead of us. But thank you for listening, everybody. We'll chat with you again very soon. Bye-bye.